What about you? How many times have you been displaced, Maryam? I looked at him. I'm like you, I said, trying my best to hide the sadness that overwhelmed me. This is the first time I have had to leave the house where I was born. How many times does a person have to be displaced in their life? Asked Hakim. Why are you asking? I said. So, I know how many more times I have left. He replied gravely.
Jamal Saeed, reading from his story, My Grandmother Fatima's Cough, as translated to English by Catherine Cobham, and published to the July 2024 issue of the Asymptote Journal. This summer 2024 issue of the Asymptote Journal highlights the importance of care within new work from authors from 35 countries. Life support, the connections we have with others, and the everyday actions we engage in for each other. To hear Jamal Saeed speak of it, his encounter with translator Catherine Cobham was an example of such an expression of care. Care for the artistic work and the story of the Syrian people. Catherine Cobham is well known for her translations of many Arab writers, including 1988 Nobel Prize-winning Egyptian author Naguib Mahfouz. Jamal Saeed was born in Syria. His political writing and opposition to the Bashar and Hafiz al-Assad regimes resulted in his imprisonment on three occasions without formal charges or a judicial process. In this episode, he speaks to us from Canada, where he sought refuge in 2016. His collection of short stories was published in Arabic in 1993. His 2022 autobiography, My Road from Damascus, ECW Press Toronto, is a memoir of his life and the dramatic changes in Syria from the 1950s until his exile in Canada. In this episode, he also reads more from his moving story, My Grandmother Fatima's Cough, told from the point of view of a young Palestinian within Yarmouk, a large encampment of displaced persons near Damascus. I'm Vincent Hostack, and this is the Asymptote Podcast. Jamal Saeed, thank you so much for joining us today on the Asymptote Podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I want to lead off with speaking about your story that was published to the summer issue of the Asymptote Journal. Its title is My Grandmother Fatima's Cough. It is translated in this edition to the English language by Catherine Cobb. It is in the fiction section, but it seems to me to also resonate with realism as well as the poetry and the language. And as for the former, I'll call it troubled setting itself of Yarmouk. This was one of the largest refugee settlements of Palestinians in Syria. And I should say for our listeners, this is a story with protagonists who are Palestinians. Now, we spoke to some of this in the introduction, but would you be comfortable speaking as to the place of your own personal and family history experience adjacent to those characters we meet in the story?
Well, I'm Syrian, and I start living in Damascus since 1977. I visited Al-Yarmouk camp many times, and I lived there continuously for about 1 year. And I visited every now and then after that. Al-Yarmouk camp is an area about 8 kilometers from the center of Damascus, and it is actually a crowded area. It's crowded by people and crowded by stories of displaced from one place to another. There were about 250,000 of the Palestinian people who moved, who actually forced to move from Palestine to the different cities in the Levant. And they have a lot of stories about the road to Al-Yarmouk camp. They have love stories on this road, many stories about massacres and about hope and about rebuilding their life many times, about their concepts of nation or homeland, about living and starting from 0 point many times. I have friends there. For a time I was a prisoner of conscience, and I met some Palestinian people in prison, and actually they told me more stories. I feel that I know this camp very well. My family actually is living in a different place in Syria. I mean parents and siblings. They are living in a slope of mountain near Latakia. It's about 360 kilometers from this camp. But me, myself, and my small family, my wife and the children, are living not far from Al-Yarmouk camp. We visit it every now and then. And actually, in that camp, I could touch something which is untouchable, like the hope, the pain, the history. You feel the history on the walls as pictures, as slogans, as something. You can't find it but on these walls, like the keys of the houses in Palestine. I can speak a lot about it. I have a long experience with the people at the place. And I lived in Syria actually continuously for 55 years. So I have to meet a lot of people from different places, from Levant, who are living in Syria. But I met the Palestinian more than the others. Of course, I live with the Syrians as a Syrian man. And for me, the camp was a special place in Syria, special place, and actually the people, the activities in the camp were more than the activities at any other place. I mean, in the camp you hear poetry, short stories, you watch a lot of artworks. It's not important. The gallery and the decoration of gallery is not important. The important thing is the painting itself, and so on.
Well, thank you for that, sharing so much.
Oh, thank you.
So we hear the story principally through the voice of Maryam. Would you tell us a little bit about the Maryam you have created for this story, her age, where she comes from, and the journey that she has made to arrive at this particular point in her life?
Maryam is one from the generation that was born in this camp. This camp actually was established in 1957. Maryam is a teenager who moved with his family for the first time from this camp, Al-Yarmouk camp, to Qudsiyah. And at the time, I was living in Qudsiyah. In 2012, I was living in Qudsiyah, and I met many of the Palestinian teenagers at the Mosque of Al-Umari, which they moved to. And actually, there are many Maryams. There are boys and girls, or teenagers, who are 12 to 13. They are strong boys and girls. Maryam is one of them. And actually, they try to deal with the circumstances as, okay, here we are, what can we do? All of them have something around their necks, which is the map of Palestine. All of them, they didn't visit Palestine at all, but they speak about Palestine as their homeland. All of them actually make you feel that these people are strong, but there's inside a lot of sadness and a lot of desire to live like the other people, with a house that they are not going to displace them from, with a nationality, with a citizenship. But on the other hand, you feel that they grow up to manage their life as it is. I met many Mariams in the schools in Damascus who are studying, and they actually, in general, told me that we have nothing but to know more and more and to be something in the world. One of them actually, one of these Mariams, and she's a girl, she's a very, very smart girl, told me once, you know, Jamal, I feel that the world is a good homeland for the people. But I love Palestine that I didn't visit, and I love our house in Al Yarmouk camp. I'm still thinking of her words, and actually I have the same ideas as she had. So Mariam is a symbol of a new generation of the people who was born in the camps. And on the other hand, she is an individual who think in the way and act in the way I mentioned in the story.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'll certainly say that confidence and strength that you speak of, as well as the inner sadness, cuts through very well throughout the story. And before we get much further, it would be wonderful and helpful, I think, for our English language listeners to hear an excerpt of the story read. I am fond of what is identified as section 3 in the translation. To me, it gives a voice to the condition of displacement and statelessness in existential terms, and really works to raise empathy and understanding of the circumstances of being moved around so many times that it is hard to keep up with where one is in the world at the moment.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Vincent, for choosing this part. I'll start. We left the camp walking in a crowd of people. My aunt muttering, "This is the fifth time I have been displaced." My brother Hakim, who was 7 years old, brought his face as close up to mine as he could and said, "What about you? How many times have you been displaced, Mariam?" I looked at him. "I'm like you," I said, trying my best to hide the sadness that overwhelmed me. "This is the first time I have had to leave the house where I was born." "How many times does a person have to be displaced in their life?" asked Hakim. "Why are you asking?" I said. "So, I know how many more times I have left," he replied gravely. My grandmother hugged him in the middle of the crowded road and said, "Only God knows." Like my father, who was leading us, Hakim looked lost. He ran to keep up with us, but soon grew tired and begged us to walk more slowly. My aunt was muttering things we didn't understand and didn't need to understand, since she wasn't addressing any of us, wiping her tears on the sleeves of her brown overcoat. She talked to the air, which seemed heavy with our sorrows.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
There's another moment in this story, really at the very beginning, which sets the scene. Mariam and her family, I believe, have returned to their temporary home in Yarmouk, which you say they still have a sentimentality about and a sense of being an important place where the family has spent their life. But as they return, find out that everything has been seized or stolen, down to the electrical wiring in the walls. Why was this an important time and place for the reader to enter the characters' worlds?
Actually, it was not easy to find that your relationship with some place is destroyed in some way. It's not easy for you to find that your chair is stolen or is broken, or your life is changed according to very violent forces. What people in Yarmouk faced in 2012 was incredible. And, you know, some militias and even the regime bombed the area and the people get out and then they lose their places. A teenager like Mariam is going to feel that there are something in the house which is belong to her. There's a warm relationship with the walls, with the books, with the maybe backpack, whatever. The same for the father who gathered things for a long time. He worked a lot to have a house. He worked a lot to bring electricity to the house. The mom sold her gold to bring things to the house. And suddenly they found that the civil war destroyed everything. And then actually it's a special relationship with the lost things, with the lost place, with the violence which make the life different. This is what we can see in the father talk with his brother who is living in Jordan.
It is a moment where you feel the immediacy of the pain once a space earns a special place in their hearts and minds. Jamal, before closing, I'd like our listeners to hear about the process of translation. This is something we bring to every episode, as this is a journal that is dedicated to translations of world literature in English. Catherine Cobham has translated your work before. I understand that includes your memoir, My Road to Damascus. I imagine that a writer builds a special rapport with a translator, particularly one the writer's worked with before. Can you tell me a little bit about the translation process and your engagement with the process, how this works between you and Catherine?
Well, actually, I started writing my memoir after coming to Canada. I came to Canada as a refugee at the end of 2016. I started to write something in 2017. I wrote the first three chapters in English, but I find that it's better for me. I can express myself better in my own language. And then I moved to write in Arabic, but I want to find a translator to help me to write to translate the sample chapters and then send them to somebody. I need an agent, I need a publisher, I need many things. I got online and find maybe three or four translators. I read their translations into English. And I find that Catherine Cobham, in her translation to the actually outstanding figures in Arabic literature, is very, very good and very great. And at the very beginning, actually, I felt afraid that she may have no time and I don't have a name. I published only a collection of short stories in Arabic and she knew nothing about me. I sent her the chapters, the sample chapters, with an email. And actually, she responded in a very, very nice email, and she made me cry. After she read some chapters. She told me that I'm going to translate them for free for the Eyes of Syria. I felt that I'm so lucky to meet such a humanitarian lady who feels what the others need and who, you know, meet the needs of the people who want to do something good for the humanity or for defending the human right. After that, you know, the book was not complete and not published. I was writing the draft, the first draft, and sent it to Catherine. Catherine was not only translator. She was advisor. She advised me. She reviewed everything. She sent comments, very important comments and notes. She was more than translator. Gradually, I felt that she's a very, very close friend. Later, she helped me in translating the collection of short stories and anything else. It's not very common nowadays to find somebody who said that, I'm not interested in the money. The money means nothing. But the work, the importance of the work itself, it means a lot of things. The last thing that I want to say about Catherine, we didn't meet even on Zoom or whatever. We meet only, we send emails to each other. And now I feel that I have a very, very close friend that I didn't meet at all. I didn't meet in person. I'll tell you a very, very short thing. When I was released from prison, I was alone and I woke in the city of Damascus. And actually, at night, I looked at the windows of the city and I felt that I have a lot of friends behind these windows, but there's a small problem that I don't meet them yet. I don't know them yet. Now, Catherine actually confirmed that I have friends all over the world, but I didn't meet them yet. This is a part of what I can say about Catherine as a friend and as a translator and as a reviewer, as advisor.
Well, I believe that readers will be gratified by this translation. The clarity in it, I don't read or write Arabic, but I can imagine it is a challenging transposition of language. Translators are our heroes, really, at Asymptote. This is keeping world literature alive. There is so much fine literature outside of what we call the Anglosphere, and I am delighted that you had this opportunity with the journal and for Catherine's fine translation.
Actually, I was lucky to find her. Yes. I'll tell you something else. I sent some emails to other translators before I found Catherine. The first thing was, okay, the first thing they are discussing the money. How much money they want for a word or for a page or whatever. Catherine, the first thing was the value of the material she is working on.
Well, thank you for sharing that story. It's a moving one.
Oh, welcome.
Jamal, is there anything that you would like to speak about here that we didn't cover in terms of the story?
Actually, the questions were very good. And I think that there's something important for the people in North America to know the real history of the Levant. What's happened, really? I mentioned Tantura, what's happened in the Tantura, the cause of the coughing of the grandma. And I hope that many people are going to find a movie. It's a documentary. It was made by an Israeli movie maker. And its name is the Tantura or Tantura. And it gives an idea about what was happened in the very beginning of founding a new state in the Middle East. I hope that people are going to know before judging or before saying anything. That's all.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Jamal Saeed.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Vincent. It's my great pleasure, actually.
My thanks go to Jamal Saeed, Catherine Cobham, and the editors and translators of the Asymptote Journal. Discover more fiction, nonfiction, poetry, visual art, criticism, an interview, and the feature section, The Story of Us, at asymptotejournal.com. Asymptote is the premier destination for world literature in translation. Until our next episode, thank you for listening to the Asymptote Podcast. I'm Vincent Hostack. Goodbye.